Let's talk first about meetings, future meetings, if everybody is willing to do that. We are now scheduled for, we have one meeting when in November? I left my other stuff in the other car. Do we have a meeting scheduled in early November?
November 3rd.
November 3rd. Okay.
I have the 3rd, 17th, and the 24th, all as dates.
That's what I have.
The 17th. Okay, let's go. Does the 17th work for everybody?
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking skip the 3rd?
No, I'm thinking we should do the let's talk about doing the 3rd. I thought that you guys have all been right all along, and I've been wrong about the speed at which I thought we could work. You all had a much better sense of that than I did. Therefore, I thought today we would just try to work on stormwater only. But I can't be here on the 3rd. So maybe if Mr. Conway would chair, you guys could go ahead without me on the 3rd.
There's a good chance I won't be here either.
I'm going to be out of town on the 3rd.
Well, then let's not do the 3rd. How about that? Because that's one-third of the group right there at least.
3rd.
All right. So we'll do the 17th. After the 17th, we have to be careful of Christmas. What do you think? Something like the 8th or the 9th? Anybody got problems with the 8th or the 9th?
If I remember correctly, in an email, there was something about room availability that week. I don't remember exactly.
They'll maybe put us over there in a closet or something. You like in the 8th
of December?
Yeah.
Good here.
Works for me.
Everybody?
Yep.
Okay. So we'll go the 17th of November and the 8th of December, and then not meet again till after the first of the year. Does that work for everybody?
So remove the 24th of November from the
24th during the week of Thanksgiving.
24th is so on top of Thanksgiving, that's going to screw people up. Okay, let's do that.
So 17th and the of November and the 8th of December?
Yes, sir. Yeah. All right, good.
7:30.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Now, with regard to the recommendations, Carol tried to consolidate. Anybody have any corrections or changes to the minutes they want to make?
Yeah, Tony was only here in spirit.
Oh, well, we have to show a big black mark by his name then.
I would have traded you places for the way I felt.
All right. Who's ever keeping track for the city? Correct the minutes to show that Tony was not here. Anything else?
As far as
any changes anybody want to suggest to the minutes?
Letter E, old business, E.
Yeah, the task force reviewed.
I think E, and then letter I, number. I think we had mentioned a separate stormwater. I had mentioned a stormwater and sewer standalone board is another option.
Yeah.
It was just minor, but.
Yes, I agree. Let's add that too, to the minutes. Anybody else have anything they want to change? then the minutes will stand approved. Some of the bigger questions, I think that if we resolve them, the other things will fall into place, are, one, I think, and correct me if you think I'm wrong about any of this, I think we're all driving toward a recommendation of some kind of advisory board. Mm-hmm. And I think the possibilities are these. One, put everything in the current water and light board. I'm not rising to conclusions about any of these. I'm just saying these are how I see the possibilities. One is put everything, leave the water and light board alone, but recommend that sewer and stormwater go into it. I mean, storm sewer and sewer go into water and light. Two, start a new board, which is Bill's idea of make current water and light, just electricity, and do water, sewer, and stormwater in the new board on the theory that it's all pipes and water and that kind of stuff. Three, leave water and light alone entirely and do a stormwater sewer advisory board. Four, just make a more general recommendation to the council that the council consider all these options. And let them pick. I kind of don't like that the most of the options, and the reason I don't is because they asked us to give them recommendations. They don't have to take our recommendations. But if we all end up, or most of us end up in the same place, I think we ought to say so, and they can do what they want to do. Let me break into legal for just a second. Do you accept, I think if we change the water and light board at all, we have to probably go to the people, don't we?
That's correct. I just wanted to make sure that you were aware that a removal of water from the water and light board would require a charter amendment.
Would it require a charter amendment to add stuff?
No. You can add duties to the water and light board. You cannot subtract duties. You could give them additional responsibilities by ordinance. You just cannot remove responsibilities.
Okay.
Similar to what we've done with the utilities director, who is also the water and light director. There have been duties added to the water and light director, but not subtracted.
Nancy, maybe we should change the order. Do you want to get out of here early?
I'll do whatever the task force would desire, but there is a baseball game on tonight.
All right.
Really? Who's playing?
Well, then.
Who's playing?
If it works for everybody, let's put that whole board structure thing on hold and go to Nancy, the Royal. Are you dressed in blue? I would think that you'd
be. It is blue. Yes, it is. Purposefully.
It would be royal blue if you were appropriate. Let's go to the legal questions and come back to the structure, our recommendation with regard to an advisory board or changes in the advisory board structure. Does everybody know Nancy? She's the city lawyer. We call you the city councilor, right?
That's correct.
Officially?
Yes.
All right. One of the questions that people had, I had, and I think other people had, is, now let me make something really clear here. Nothing Nancy says is going to be an official legal opinion of the city councilor's office, legal opinions can be extremely fact determinative, and you can answer a question for one purpose and then a lawyer can later find it used against them when the facts change a little bit. So, or the situation can change, or I've asked her to participate in a discussion with us without, of these things without necessarily rising at all to what we would think of as a legal opinion.
Thank you.
Everybody get that?
Let's see, then, but her legal opinion is only in effect if it's a written legal opinion.
No, I think what he's trying to say is that given the particular facts or circumstances in which the question's asked, we don't want to take the comments that are discussed here tonight out of context as an official legal opinion on the subject matter. So I'm here to try to answer any questions that you have, anything that requires additional investigation as to facts or true legal authority, we will have to come back and provide those answers to you later. But I will give you my best judgment as it exists today if I actually have a informal opinion about.
Let me put
matters.
It this way. The Attorney General responds to a legal opinion only when the legal question is specifically written down and given to the Attorney General by somebody who's got the statutory ability to do that, because then they're responding to a specific written question which presumes certain facts. And here she's agreed to participate, which I really appreciate, in a more freewheeling discussion about what we think, for instance, about the Hancock ramifications of changing the billing system for stormwater without being held to a specific legal opinion. Everybody get that?
Got it.
All right. Okay. How about anybody else? Does anybody have specific legal questions that they want to ask about?
They're part of the agenda.
Right. But okay, let's just go through it. Do you think, or what do you think of the concept of the City of Columbia selling a bond, either revenue or special obligation, and only legally, not from a policy or fixing street perspective, to take care of the backlog? You think you can do that without a vote?
Of stormwater?
Yes, for stormwater.
I don't think you can issue the bonds without a vote. I think you have to have a vote on special. I think you can issue special obligation bonds, but it does require a vote in order to do those, I believe. But we would have to double check the details.
Same thing with revenue bonds.
The revenue bonds, yes. It's a more interesting question on revenue bonds when it comes to stormwater utility because. There's been a case out of the city of St. Louis that where impervious surface fees were determined to be a tax as opposed to a user fee. So the imposition of fees to for a revenue bonds, I think, obviously would require a vote of the people.
Do you think
it?
Go ahead.
A more basic question. Is there any statutory authority to issue stormwater revenue bonds?
I think as a charter city, we would have to do some additional investigation. I think as a charter city, we would be able to find the authority to do that with a vote of the people. Ultimately, we have already established in the City of Columbia a stormwater utility, and we have current rates in effect for that. I think you could, under that stormwater utility, issue bonds with a vote of the people, but we would have to at least get an opinion of bond council before we would move forward, obviously, in that regard, because they're the ones that have to guarantee those opinions.
And I think the task force needs to know that.
That when I talked with our bond counsel at Gilmore Bell, and they did not have a definitive answer for us. They thought at this stage of the research that they had previously done that it could be done, but I just can't give you a guarantee on that. There are certainly ways to fund stormwater improvements. We approved sewer revenue bonds recently, and there's a significant portion of those dedicated to the INI reduction program. And that's an available revenue bonding source as well.
But it's real clear in the state statutes that a municipality has the authority to issue sewer revenue bonds.
That's right. And if you operate, so the question becomes, there's also authority under Chapter 250, I believe it's Chapter 250, that you can operate a system in which your storm water and your sanitary sewer is operated in conjunction with each other. They call that a combined system, but a combined system doesn't mean that they all have to flow necessarily in the same pipe. I mean, from an engineer's perspective, a lot of times when you talk about a combined system, you're talking about both the sanitary and storm flowing in the same pipe. But that's not necessarily because the state regulations have changed. What you're seeing now, what was historically a combined system, is a combined operating system, not a combined transmission system or combined flow system. So the question that bears some investigation is whether or not you can continue to operate as a combined sewer system, both the sanitary and the storm, which is contemplated under Chapter 250, and have that bonding authority as a revenue bond. So that's ultimately where I think the arguments are going to be on one side or the other.
Which that would be similar to the statutory authority to issue combination water and sewer revenue bonds.
Correct.
And then it's very clear, too, that when water and light go to issue bonds, that those bonds, if they're for electrical purposes, are still water and electric revenue bonds, and then vice versa. If it's for water improvements, you still issue water and electric revenue bonds. Those are the authorities that they're issued under, even though it's a combined system to separate it out, but you give the pledge of revenue of the combined system.
Exactly.
Is it relevant or dispositive of the question of there not being a specific statutory authority for stormwater that we're a charter city?
Well, I don't think stormwater has to be a standalone authority. That's what I'm saying is under Chapter 250, you actually have stormwater as a part of sewer authority.
Okay. So, you know, I was thinking maybe the other statute, the one that John refers to, makes it clear that a statutory city could do it. But a charter city has greater powers than a statutory city is where I was, what I was thinking.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, yes. That's exactly right. Typically, what we look to is if there's any power granted to any city in the state of Missouri, then the charter city can have access to those powers as a charter city.
Without specific statutory enactment.
That's correct. So that's a very broad, obviously, characterization of charter city's authority.
Right.
But if we can find it in the statutes for any city, we typically believe that the general assumption is that it's available for a charter city.
So then we would ultimately continue to rely upon bond council?
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Okay, so without rising to a conclusion, generally we think that we probably have the authority, if the council were to choose to do it, to send to the people the question of a revenue bond for stormwater.
Yes, sitting here today, I believe that it would be an option that you could choose.
Without going to Jeff City and asking permission.
Correct.
All right. And without rising to any conclusions that's what we want to do yet.
In my 1.5 days of legal research.
Right, I get that. Okay. Anybody else have questions about the issuance of debt, legal matters?
Okay, as a matter of clarification, it is my understanding that this building that we're in was financed with special obligation bonds, And did we vote on those special obligation bonds?
You know, I'm going to have to take a look at that. I know I said that special obligation bonds would have to do a vote. It's possible that we might not have to do that. I'm thinking I was actually incorrect. I think that we would need, we should be able to do special obligation bonds without. Now, the difference between this building and a lot of other structures is that this building actually has an asset that can be lease purchased back.
That's right.
As a in what we typically call certificates of participation are a form of lease purchase, and so COPs or certificates of participation are a sophisticated lease purchase transaction for a necessary municipal asset. Unfortunately, when it comes to stormwater, you don't have the same types of assets that can be utilized in a lease purchase transaction. So those, it doesn't hold, it's not the same transaction as this building.
Unlike this building, a box culvert has no market availability. I mean, you can't, if the bonds were to go south, the bondholder couldn't use the box culvert for an asset to gain any revenue to recover their losses.
Exactly.
All right.
And it's my understanding that if you issue revenue bonds, you're not giving any security. You are giving the net pledged right. revenues. And so if it goes south, it's gone south, and buyer beware.
That's right.
Right. It's, and they're subject to annual appropriation. So
right.
exactly. Yeah. And so it's really, and it would be really difficult, I think, from a financing perspective to get a good rate on special obligation bonds for stormwater. Although they would.
Because you got no asset.
You have no asset.
What'd you say?
Again.
You
got no asset.
Again, though, I would rely upon Gilmoreville or somebody
those
to.
Those assets are on the book, but the revenue bond is you're pledging your ability to raise revenue and create net revenues to pay those bonds.
That's right.
That's the long-held principle of municipal issuance of tax-exempt bonds.
I agree. Anybody else on the debt questions? Potential revenue or special obligation bond questions?
Okay, one more, Mr. Chairman.
Please. No, that's what we're here for.
Nancy, how about a neighborhood improvement district? Where does that take us? I think we've done that for sewer, a neighborhood improvement district. County does.
You create the district, and then it's a special assessment back onto the
property owners.
And you, when at the time you create the district, you decide how you're going to allocate that. If it's
right.
going to be by square footage of the property, by street frontage, or you know whatever the nature of the improvement is.
If you were to do that, you'd have a vote in the whole city or in this the proposed special district.
The NID, you'd have a vote in the NID boundary, yeah.
Who decides those boundaries?
The neighborhood.
Well, the council would affect it.
Well, and the council has to approve all the transactions to create it and to move it forward and so on. But it would be a mechanism that would be available if there was just something special about an area that they wanted to move ahead, that they couldn't get done what they wanted done. They could do that and do it on their own, but they're willing to have to pay the tax assessment to repay the bonds that it takes to do that.
But that wouldn't coincide with wards or any, those would be their own special boundaries.
No, the NID would have its own special boundaries, yeah.
I would think that would take a lot of coordination between property owners and the city. And a lot of
that'd be a simple majority vote or a third vote.
Well, you know, I guess you know what we're struggling with here is means to finance, and so if it just takes more work, it takes more work, and if they get it done, they get it done. The people have their project; their life moves on, and.
I just see that as an argument between neighborhoods. If one guy's got water in his backyard and three don't, then.
But the whole, okay, my only reason to mention it is is an option that, not saying that we do it, it's just an option out there. And I think our purpose is to throw the options out there as to what are the possibilities to get something financed. And probably when we rank it, Tony, it probably towards the bottom.
Yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing.
Yeah.
Okay.
For purposes of stormwater, you would have to create your NID as in within a watershed or part of a watershed or a sub-watershed type
yep.
boundary. You couldn't just create a...
It'd be nice if the neighborhood would all buy in that everybody has equal problems, but really it's just the one or two people that are affected by the flooding are the ones that are going to be pushing for it.
Okay. Anybody else on the various possible debt options? All right. Impervious surface building, billing methodology. The St. Louis case, the way I understood it, the municipality in St. Louis wanted to enact a new tax based on impervious surface, or were they changing from their current system? You know, you might not know the answer.
Well, I have a copy of the case with me, but let's see if I can get to it. I don't know if it was a new or existing. I will tell you, the whole idea about whether or not, again, talking big picture, I think from a fee imposition on stormwater charges, from a municipal attorney standpoint, we have always thought as a kind of conglomerate group of professionals that the fee structure that would be most likely to withstand a Hancock challenge would be an impervious surface because the property owner is in control of how much of the property is pervious and how much is impervious. So if you're in control of that, isn't it more like a user fee as opposed to a tax on the property? So when the city of St. Louis or the Metropolitan St. Louis District imposed the impervious surface, that was a test to see how that would work, and they were challenged as a part of that. And I'm not exactly sure of the timing of when they actually imposed that. I can try to find the facts of when they actually imposed it, but the ultimate ruling by the court was that the impervious surface fee that was charged was a tax and was not a fee, so it was subject to voter approval.
Right now in the city of Columbia, the commercial property owner is charged on a per square foot of impervious surface. The individual homeowner is charged on a three-tier system where they pay, depending on which tier they fall in, they pay so much money. But without regard to how much impervious surface is on their lot. And apartment, non-owner occupied rental property generally is charged on a fee to each apartment. Am I right about all that?
I believe you are.
How about on the there's a couple of areas that I think are gray in my mind. One is the single family rental property. That's charged like a owner occupied house, isn't it?
There are four tiers.
Okay, but the is rental single family rental property a separate tier?
No, it is it is charged just like owner
regardless of whether it's owner or owner rent.
Right.
Okay. So all single family residences are charged on the four tier system. How about the duplex?
I think the change is at above fourplex. So it is smaller than that, it is based on the square footage.
Who pays on a duplex?
I would have to go back and look at that. I think they are split because it is supposed to be charged to each customer. Yeah, yeah. But it can be charged to the owner. It is.
It's the occupant or the owner.
Does anybody else know the answer to that question?
It is. It's the occupant or the owner. It can be both. Go ahead.
On the duplexes,
yeah.
Anything with four units or less is charged as a tier two. And four units and more over four units is a tier one.
Charged as a tier two to whom?
To the occupant.
To the occupant.
Yes.
Okay.
Broke down to the meter, I think.
Utility account holder. Isn't it?
Yeah, the utility account holder, which is generally the occupant.
Right. But it could be the owner.
It could be.
So one question that we have to answer or might answer is, do we want to change that to bill in the owner of the duplex?
Well, those particular fees were approved by the voters. So if you make any changes to the manner in which those fees are assessed, you will have to go back to the voters.
Good. That was my next point.
Yes.
So if we were to charge the way that stormwater bills occur, we'd have to go to the – anything we change will have to go to the voters.
That's correct. Anything that's been approved by the voters has to go back to the voters.
Chris?
Yes, sir.
The problem is when there's no utility account holder, there's no bill sent.
I know. That's the underlying issue that we're all interested in and that you brought up. So you believe that if Bill owns a duplex and I live in half of it, and today, or let me give a better example. Bill owns a duplex and I own the duplex next door. I, as the owner, could say, send the bills to me in my duplex, and Bill could say, bill the individual people, right?
That's correct.
But for us to say all those bills have to go to the owner would require voter approval? Okay. It would also clearly then require voter approval to change from billing individual apartments in an apartment building to billing the owner of the apartment building then.
Yes.
Anybody else have questions about that whole question?
What about the billing cycle? I think we talked also about, particularly for building owners or large properties, going to a quarterly payment versus a monthly payment. Would that take a vote?
I think you could probably do that administratively as long as it wasn't part of the ballot language, and I don't believe that would have been part of the ballot language that was approved by the voters.
Yeah, I think
so
it wasn't,
the mechanism by which you do the collection.
I think it was non-residential. We talked about larger commercial properties instead of paying monthly, paying on a less frequent basis.
So I mean it's one of those things where it would still be a if it is a per month charge, it would still be a per month charge. We would just administratively be able to allow people to pay that on a quarterly basis instead of a monthly basis or whatever. I mean, I think you can make administrative arrangements on how it's paid as long as the fee structure itself doesn't change.
And does that impact the cash flow of the utility? Is it significant enough to?
It shouldn't. Yeah. But I think there should be some discussion of how administratively that would be done.
Yeah.
Because the ordinance as it was written is difficult to administer. So depending on what recommendations are made, it could create more problems rather than solving them. Just to let you know, we are in the process of implementing a new billing system that will allow us to do some things that we can't currently do. Part of that process, we are reviewing all of the utilities to more efficiently bill to make sure that we're doing everything that we should be doing and make recommendations for changes that might be possible. We have discussed the possibility of doing it on a particularly stormwater on a different frequency in certain instances. Part of that is, where would that apply and what customers would be impacted? You know, possibly a large customer that has a significant amount of impervious surface. However, depending on what other things they're being billed for, would they really want to have that separated? Because one of the options of the new billing system that will be able to consolidate bills, where they, if they have multiple facilities, we can put one together, all together in one bill. So those are things that we'll have to have discussions on with customers, that where that kind of thing could apply. So I would just caution you to think about what administratively occur. Certainly in some instances it might make sense, but it might, you know, there would need to be some options there.
I think that's a good idea as far as trying to combine some of those utility bills. Just last Tuesday we had 32 different utility bills come to our office at however many cents a stamp. Right. If we got one envelope, even if they're broke down separate, I mean, that's a very small amount of change, but spread across the city, I think could make a huge deal just administratively.
Well, one conclusion that I can rise to is that anything we do in this area has got to be worth the game's got to be worth the candle if we have to go to the voters. It's got to be important enough, and it's got to be either operationally or just as important enough, or it's got to be financially important enough to be worth going back to the voters for. Okay, anything else about billing, the legal aspects of billing methodology?
Let's see, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to need to apologize to you. I've checked my notes, and I have one more point about the issuance of debt.
Can we finish and see if we can finish impervious surface, then I'll go right back to it?
Yep.
Anybody else on any impervious surface questions? Legal questions. Okay.
Okay, the point with the revenue bonds as a possibility, again, as you look out that if the stormwater utility could issue debt and revenue bonds, that for instance, you know, I think there's a goal to want to expedite the projects, to get on down the road with a lot of the projects and so on, and that if the revenue bond was a clear avenue, then if you would take, say, 4% in 25 years on $10 million, that's $650,000 annual payment. And then take that annual payment in the revenue stream that's going to be created from the stepped increase of the stormwater fee to 2020, and we'd find out that you could finance it. The revenue bonds as an open avenue, then you could spend $650,000 of that and issue the debt and have $10 million at your disposal to do projects. And now I'm done.
All right. Okay. Last on the legal stuff is changes to the revenue recovery from utility customers. Some members have articulated or talked about the problem of lost revenue because we so often bill rental people who move away, leaving us with owing, they owe the stormwater utility $9.30, and you guys just aren't going to spend much time chasing a $9.30 bill. On the other hand, a lot of $9.30 bills means less money for stormwater. If we, my thinking at least was, if we could change to, or at least come closer to, billing the owner of the real property, we'd have less $9.30 losses, but you don't think that's possible without going to the people.
Right, because anytime you start doing that with a, and you start imposing fees on property owners, it, under the Hancock analysis, it's going to look a lot more like a tax.
Like a property tax.
Than a user fee as well, and we've already got the voter approved fees.
Yeah.
Now, there are probably, you know, I think there's more than one way to skin the cat too. You could probably require up front a deposit, which then gets refunded, or that you can apply to any unpaid bills at the end of the term before you refund it. So there are some things that you can do that are more have to do with the operation of the utility than really imposition of the fee or who it's imposed upon.
You think we could require a deposit from renters that we don't require from owners?
I think you'd have to require it from everyone across the board to establish the utilities in your name. And once you establish the utility account, I think you can require a deposit.
Without any vote?
Yes, because it is fully refundable once the bills are paid. You just have to establish what the policies and procedures are for how those deposits are handled, and you know, how long are you going to keep it on file? What are you going to do with it? Are you going to require it for a period of years and then it's refunded, or do you require it for the entire life of the account? What are the administrative challenges to trying to track those? You know, there are administrative challenges to that, and sometimes valid reasons why municipalities don't want to do that. But I do think that there are options out there.
We do have deposits for all other utilities.
Except stormwater.
And the total is substantial. So stormwater, especially for a residential customer, would be fairly minor number.
Still write off quite a bit of utilities, though, don't you?
It's not a, you know, it's a fairly low number because we have a fairly aggressive.
Compared to what you collect, but it's still a pretty high number.
Well,
I'd take the money.
Well, I would too, but yeah, it's a few hundred thousand dollars with all the utilities, but it's not, you know, when you look. And also part of it, the deposits are applied to the different utilities in order, not necessarily to, and usually electric is last because we have the ability of turning off service, and so generally people will pay their service relatively quickly. The problem comes in areas where we do not have a metered service, in particular, where people cannot pay their bill and there's not much we can do. Effectively. We do have some agreements with the other water districts to turn off service, but there's still a limited number of customers that we don't have much control over.
But you can't turn off stormwater.
Can't turn stormwater off.
Build a dam around the people's house.
Chris, I think we oughtn't to focus on having to vote. If we have to vote, we ought to focus on not doing it, or it's right?
No, I think that's one of the very interesting questions. I don't know the answer to that question, but I think...
Every 20 years or so, we ought to look at what we're doing.
Yeah, well, that's what we're doing here. I just think it's a legitimate consideration. I don't know the answer yet. I do think it's got to be worth... And the other question is, let's assume that we wanted, let's assume without deciding, that we wanted to change to a billing the property owner, and that election would have to go to the people. Let's further assume that we wanted to do a revenue, that we recommended to the council, and the council agreed to do a revenue bond, and that would have to go to the people. That looks to me somewhat counterproductive. to have both of those elections going. Because I don't know how you keep people from being very, very confused about all that. You can't put them together in one because the subjects are too different. I just don't think it's, I don't know the answer, Bill.
I prefer to look at it like if you didn't have any system at all, what would you do for each one?
Sure.
Rather than changing something that's already been passed, it was to pass incorrectly.
Yeah.
I fix it. What would you do if you start from scratch?
My heart tends to be very much with you on the justice aspect of billing impervious surface. The question is that overwhelmed by the practicalities of it?
It's just an equitable issue.
I hear you. Anybody else on legal?
We are billing impervious surface on large commercial properties. That's correct.
Non-residential.
But not non-residential, no. And I had a question really for Jim, is if you do you see that, and this is really probably rentals, that rentals would go without utilities on. In other words, the renter would vacate, turn their utilities off, and that stay no utilities. Usually the owner would turn them back on.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Often they do. It really depends. And it's certainly we encourage landlord reversion where it automatically switches back to the landlord. That doesn't happen in every case, but it certainly in the larger apartment complexes, that typically does occur.
Landlord reversion, even on a single family, whether it be a duplex or a single family home, it's cheaper to do that than it is to have the utility come out, shut your power off, turn everything off, pay the fee, come back out, turn everything on. The time and effort and even the money for a landlord, that's far more expensive than it is to do the reversion. Any landlord with their salt knows that. I'm not going to say there's
Point was I would sense that it would be relatively small because I know one thing we talked about is occupancy rate and having vacant apartments and would they be really not collecting revenue because apartments are empty, but the likelihood it's probably getting collected because the owners have transferred over utilities and are carrying that bill until it gets rented again. My second question is on large commercial properties. When you've got an impervious surface calculation and that building goes vacant, they turn the utilities off, but you're still paying for runoff off the building and the parking lot. How are those addressed?
Well, that is a lot more problematic because certainly in the commercial area, because the language says parcel, and there can be multiple commercial properties on one parcel. Typically residential, you buy your house and it's on a parcel, so that's different. We are, as part of this conversion, we are looking at that issue in particular. But theoretically, we could be missing some. Theoretically, we could also be charging more twice for the same area. We were working, GIS is assisting us in, we have to pull the property owner, the parcel owner information from the county, and working with GIS, we are working through the process. We are not going to have good answers for a few months. Our target date for go live for the new system is April, and we hope to have much better information before that. But I can't give you good information right now.
Nancy, do you think the council could change the statute to enact a reversion of the bill policy absent voter approval?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Okay. Bill owns an apartment building, and I'm the renter in it. The stormwater bill comes to me today. We all agree with that. I split and don't pay the stormwater bill. Currently, that money's lost, or often lost. Some landowner, in some cases, that's just billed to the apartment building owner, and he just pays it and built into the rent, however you choose.
You're talking about a mandatory reversion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
You don't what?
I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
I agree with you, but I don't know if we can do it without voter approval is my question.
I'm going to have to take a look at that. It might be possible.
That might be a way to get to some of this. Because when you said that, a light went.
I don't disagree with that at all. I think that's an excellent idea. Going back to what I said, I think the city probably makes more off fee on reconnection fees coming back out than they do.
That makes the landowner the payer of last resort, doesn't it?
On all utilities. So you'd actually be talking about that on all utilities.
That kills a whole lot of birds with one stone.
Yeah. You're still going to lose what the renter doesn't pay.
Not if you have a reversion policy.
Yeah, the reversion starts doesn't when you're closing your name. You can't.
Transferred at a specific date.
Yeah.
Right.
Occupancy.
The delinquent tenant would have to call and say, cut my utilities off instead of just splitting town. If they split town and it doesn't get cut off for 2 months, then whatever that 2 months would be.
Eliminates the vacated property without collecting any revenue.
But it would still be better than what's going on now.
Well, why couldn't you? I'm not saying you should. I'm saying why couldn't you enact or could you enact a policy that says, to the extent that any tenant does not pay the stormwater portion of his utility bill, or pay for stormwater, that bill is then billable, that money is billable to the landlord.
I agree with that.
Well, I know, but can we do it legally without a vote?
I don't know the answer.
I know, right. Yeah, but my question is hypothetical.
We have to consider whether there are other obstacles and whether or not we would always know who's a tenant.
Right.
You have to think through that in all of the various scenarios.
That's a really interesting question, isn't it?
I believe you'd have some difficulty requiring a landlord to keep utilities on the property.
Yeah, maybe. I don't mean it's fat-free, but it seems to me to have certain real strong advantages.
If you've got a 100-unit apartment complex and you got 10 vacant units and they're all identical, why have utilities on all 10 of them?
Well, what it's going to do is it's going to incline the landlords to say the heck with it, I'm just going to pay this directly and build it into the rent, isn't it? It's going to informally push the landlords in that direction.
They still have to have the mechanism for how you're going to build a stormwater utility charge if the renters pay the utilities on their own. I think we have. And we're just looking at the section. I think we have property owner responsibility as part of the stormwater charge. It's just you have to marry that with the various mechanisms available to collect it and then come up with a cost-efficient way to do it.
Okay. I would like to know, if possible, for our next meeting, whether or not it is possible and, B, whether it is reasonable to enact such a policy. Of a reversion where the landlord is the stormwater payer of last resort.
The landlord is jointly responsible for, the property owner is jointly responsible for payment of that. So I do think you already have, for purposes of legal purposes, kind of joint and several liability on payment of that stormwater charge. So the landowner is going to be responsible. It's just mechanically, how do you collect that? Do you mechanically require that to be a reversion and then the property owner gets just the stormwater bill, or are you going to do that with all of your utilities?
So you think today, if I, the tenant, leave town without paying my last 6 months of stormwater, you could today, if
collect bill, from the property owner.
Collect from the property owner.
Yes.
Then the question becomes, how come we're not doing it?
Well, part of it is administratively, it would be incredibly difficult with the current billing system we have. I think that with the new billing system, we will be able to do that.
Oh, you do?
I do believe that.
Because that might answer, it would answer the question largely, and it would push landlords towards being the record payer of stormwater. Okay. I think that exhausts the legal. Other legal questions for Nancy?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. See if I can get this out correctly. All right. So what I'm seeing, or what I know from the water and light department's issuance of debt and the annual considerations of whether the water rate needs to be changed or the electric rate needs to be changed, that those are done legislatively through the council and don't require voter approval. And I think the same is true with the sewer. Then the question becomes, if the stormwater utility can issue stormwater revenue bonds, does all this voter approval entanglement, if you want to call it that, or considerations, go away?
No. What happens is, though, when you get voter approval for revenue bonds, along with the approval of those revenue bonds, you're granted the authority to adjust the rates in the manner necessary to cover the payment on the bonds. So typically when you issue voter-approved revenue bonds, you also get the authority to adjust the rates for that purpose. It does not grant you the authority to adjust the existing rates without a vote of the people. And there's a fundamental difference between water and electric operations, because both of those have been deemed to be user fees and not taxes. According to the Zweig case out of St. Louis, stormwater fees are more like a tax, and they are considered to be a tax, according to that case.
And it was a new fee, or they were just changing an
existing
fee?
Okay, so it was. So this is to answer the chairman's question. It was a new fee. They established the fee according to the case in 2008. It was challenged and overturned by the trial court as being an unlawful tax under Hancock without a vote of the people. Ultimately, it worked its way up to the Supreme Court in 2013, at which point in time the Supreme Court affirmed the Hancock analysis that it was a tax. The scary part about those kinds of cases is that amidst all of that, there was a $4.7 million attorney fee award to the plaintiffs who challenged that as being a tax instead of a
user
fee.
You're in the wrong business.
I certainly am. So if you think, you know, I'm trying to be conservative in my opinion when it comes to a vote of the people, I absolutely am. And that's one of the things that we have to take a look at is risk reward on that type of an analysis. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Any more legal type questions?
It partially answers mine.
Can I get you more fully answered?
I think we're okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or may Nancy go and
they may know what the score is?
Bite her nails.
Yes. You don't want to know, do you?
I do.
Mets are up 1-0, top of the fifth.
You know, it's our fault for keeping you here. If you were home watching, it would have been a different.
If I had been yelling at my television, I'm sure it would have changed the outcome.
Nancy, thank you very, very much for coming and for being so open and frank with us. You're nowhere near as bad as most people say.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to take that as a compliment.
All right.
Anything else you need, just don't hesitate to let them know. I won't be here every night, but I'll be happy to come back if you have additional questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's return to discussion of the other recommendations. You want to start with potential structures of an advisory board? We'll have at it then. Somebody? I'll start. I've come to the conclusion. We all know what the options are. I've come to the conclusion that, A, we should make a specific recommendation. The council will, through these discussions, have heard and be aware of all the permutations. I believe that what we should do is leave water and light alone entirely, although there's a good argument for putting sewer, stormwater, and water together, because they're all water and pipes and that kind of thing. The reasons to not do it are, A, would require voter approval, and B, Water and Light Board has worked well as it is for a long time. It seems to me that those overcome the practical reality that in some senses it would be better to have all the water type stuff together. For my money, I think that my best choice would be leave Water and Light alone, Water and Light Board alone, do a new board for sewer and stormwater. Okay, tear that up or make other ideas or whatever.
I'd like to hear from the folks that have to set up these board meetings and attend them, because it's easy to recommend another board and sure. Create another layer of bureaucracy and meetings.
I used to be there.
So I'd like to hear the perspective of those that have to schedule these meetings, attend them, and what would make sense is there's too much if it was all in one, and it's probably better to have two.
I think the more basic question is, would someone define the problem for me?
I think from my perspective is the fact that at least particularly with storm sewer, because it's very open in the public right now, a lot of concern, it pulls some of the political control of that utility out to the utility board and maybe soften some of that, so when it gets to council, some of those issues have already been addressed. That's my view of it.
Two different questions there. One is, are we fixing something that ain't broke? That's your point, right?
Well, that, and I still think there is, since the council makes the appointments for the commissions and the boards, there would seem that there is a void somewhere in the, well, there's not boards now, that the council would pursue, that they would want a citizen board. And it would seem that that should be a part of the discussion as to what is the defining the need and the problem and what void do they have by not having a board?
Chris,
and that That's, we're
let me come to you in a minute.
And that we just don't. It has a nice idea and look to it, but then what void are we trying to fill?
Probably before I go sit down, I think I just want to answer Greg's question here of the staff time. I think that was your question. It was really, how much of obligation time commitment. I mean, certainly working with an advisory board is a very important role that the department serves. Now, whether it's a single board or a couple of boards, I don't think I can really give you a good judgment on whether I think it would be an inefficient use of staff time to have to interface with two boards, because the material may require the same amount of time, whether it be a single board or two boards. So I think at the end of the day, it's really a structure that the community and the council would feel comfortable with, as opposed to the staff's need for convenience. Was there another question?
I think Bill had a comment he wanted to make.
I think we're straying off our charge if we remove water from the Water and Light Advisory Board. At the present time, the council has directed us not to review water and limit our review of electricity to downtown area. So until council reconsiders that charge, if they do, I think we'll leave Water and Light Advisory Board alone.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
But if they reconsider that charge, then we've got to rethink that issue.
And I think it comes down to the vote issue again, because Water and Light is a chartered board.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Okay. I in order to create maybe a better understanding of how the Water and Light Advisory Board works, as to not that we need more paper, but this is a sampling of documents that come before the board, our calendar, the way we work. It also has, by charter, we're required to make a written report to the council, and that's a part of it. My objective here is to give some flavor as to how the Water and Light Advisory Board functions, and that would may shed some light on what you would do if there was other commissions and boards created.
Anybody else? Anybody got any thoughts or comments?
I want to come back to what Ms. Fowler presented to us in response to John's question about what's broken or whatever, is that from a citizen perspective, I mean, the citizens I've been talked to are very upset about what's going on with storm and sewer, and I don't admittedly know much about the Water and Light Advisory Board and what they do, but the way I would see an advisory board for sewer and storm would be the chance for the citizens to speak up and have some representation, and not just that, but some feedback, if that makes sense. And if the citizens feel like there's something's not right, then I think we have to take that into perspective. And if an advisory board keeps council from having to have task force things like this, like we're doing right now, it keeps, you know, a group of nine of us from having to learn about all of this stuff over a year, and and instead it's a group of people who are know the stuff, they're invested in it, and they keep up with it like John does, and then you're not having to relearn everything every year and try and figure it all out in four or five meetings. That's just my take.
Anybody else? Well, I'm going to make a specific proposal then. And I'm doing it not because I think it's the absolute best analysis, but just or best result. I agree with that, but I think that's the argument to do it, is that the citizens of Columbia seem to believe that they want more input into stormwater and sewer policy making, and an advisory board would give them that, or at least help them to get that. Here's the specific proposal: that we recommend to the council that the council consider establishing a citizen advisory board for storm sewer, and stormwater. Anybody want to change it or comment on it?
Or the
I'll give you a chance.
Let's see. Does it? Let's see, Chris, would it be better to go through our entire charge here and then reflect back as to the advisory, citizen advisory consideration?
You're thinking instead of voting now?
Instead of voting now, we go, you know, continue on, we do transportation and we do the sewer and we do the solid waste and get down to the end, and then we reflect back.
Anybody else on that question about whether we should
I would agree with that. I think we could probably agree in concept today.
Yeah.
And when we get our final recommendations in the final form and we prioritize and, you know, accept or reject them, that would be the time to firm them up as recommendations to council.
All right, let me ask the group two questions. One, did I phrase the decision properly? Or does anybody want to change the way that I phrased it?
Well, I think it's good. I think
that's the question.
I think the council still has the option to not accept that recommendation. It is so. If
sure,
they don't want
sure.
To,
I agree with all that.
I don't think we need to state if they want to do one.
I just want to make sure that I'm asking everybody is agrees with that. That's the question that ought to be before us. And the second question is when do we vote to do it or not do it? So, A, did I phrase it right? Anybody want to quarrel with the way? And please do if you think we should. Okay. I don't see anybody wanting to do that. All right. Second, anybody else want to weigh in on the time frame about making the choice now versus waiting?
I would agree. We don't need to come to
okay.
This decision.
Hey. Anybody else?
We've got 30 recommendations on this spreadsheet. I think we ought to focus, narrow them down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think we do here because there's several of them go to the question of an advisory structure.
Several of them are the same, just worded a little bit differently.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Okay. John, did you want to comment on this specifically or want to wait? If we're not going to vote on them, do you want to wait and comment on the whatever we do at the end of the meeting?
Actually,
please do.
John Clark, 403 North 9th Street. My comments are framed in having studied the form of government we have, which is not the form of government that everybody has. It's the council-manager form of government. It's not a citizen-appointed thing that you're talking about. It's a council-appointed board. Water and Light Advisory reports to the council, and a council-manager form of government, for it to work, the council actually has to understand some stuff. They don't have staff, they should. They don't legislate, they should. So I'm very much in favor of creating this for the same reason I think Water and Light Board, whether it's in the charter or not, has been beneficial for years. The council in our form of government cannot do everything. So they appoint boards and commissions, various ones. This one, of course, is to provide oversight input, citizen input, all this kind of stuff for all of those good reasons. So my argument for this is to say, yes, whether we need it with some other things, I think probably too. This is an accountability issue. It is mainly about helping the council get better information to make better decisions. And it is starved for such information. We do not have those structures. So that's a form of government and how you make council manager forms of government works argument, in addition to the citizens having more input and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And well, wait a minute, anybody have questions? All right, no. Okay. I'm having trouble getting back to the document in here because I left my stuff in my wife's car. Okay. Here we go. All right, the next one, I'm just going down the thing. There's the whole issue of whether we should say anything to the council, make any recommendations with regard to technical tools, rain gauges, GIS equipment, other types of databases. Does anybody want to make a specific recommendation about any of that stuff?
Well, everybody got it, but I redrafted all the technical aspects into one recommendation for discussion versus having multiples.
Yes. Will you read it to us?
And I would agree with what you're saying, Mr. Chairman, as long as it deals with infrastructure.
Yeah.
You want me to go ahead and read it?
Please.
It's recommended that the Stormwater Utility continue to research and employ cost-effective technologies to assist in the management of the city's storm water infrastructure system. Based on the task force understanding, suggestions for further evaluation of possible implementation include to better manage system assets, expand the utilization of the utility's GIS database with detailed equipment information such as type, size, age, drawings, condition, photos, etc., to analyze the impact of the new development controls related to the MS4 permit. The utility should explore the possible use of water runoff tools within the ESRI GIS program. To help refine detailed mapping with interconnecting utilities, the utility should coordinate a GIS shared data and mapping meeting with representatives from Boone County and the University of Missouri on a regular basis, suggested at least twice per year. To help refine topographical and impervious structure data, the utility should explore the use of LIDAR during the periodic flyover mapping projects, which I think are roughly completed on a five-year basis. To gather real-time information for operational actions and to develop more refined historical rainfall data, the utility should explore the purchase and installation of an automated rain gauge system similar to the system installed by the City of Springfield, Missouri. And lastly, to champion the ongoing engineering needs and application of technology, it's recommended the city designate an engineering manager for the stormwater utility.
Okay. I think that comprises a very good proposal for us to consider. Does anybody want to make any suggestions to change it, modify it, or anything like that?
Is there one FTE engineering manager for the stormwater utility? No, okay. Good.
Okay. So I don't hear anybody saying they don't like that language. I'm not saying that you like that proposal, but you think that's we're asking ourselves the right question there.
Would the engineering manager, would that be funded by the stormwater utility?
Well, I think, to clarify, I don't know that it has to be a full-time position. I think it could be a shared position based on the workload. But it does need a technical oversight for the utility. So I would think I would defer that to the utility themselves on how it's best to manage that asset, whether it be a shared or split responsibility. But they do need somebody with an engineering background.
Okay. Any other comments?
Oh, here we go.
Cool. All right. What?
Currently, there is a engineering manager for sewer and stormwater, and it's split 80% sewer funding and 20% stormwater funding. Just
thanks.
FYI.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, all right. So, when I hear that, then that leads me to believe that there, in stormwater and the critical needs and the problems that exist and our long list of CIP projects and so on, that to have a champion, that champion has to be more than 20%. You've got to look out for what's going on in the utility and speak up and be a promoter, but I don't see that 20% gets that done.
I would probably agree, just based on the regulatory challenges that the stormwater utility deals with every day.
Should we then modify the draft proposal to say something like that, at least a half time, add the words at least a half time? I agree with your premise. And in order to address your premise, do we fix it by saying the person should, our recommendation is that they consider at least a half time person? Because I'm trying to find a balance between using the money all up and having the champion that you're talking about.
Again, it comes back to, in my mind, the utility understanding the level of services that they need to perform the work, and just to arbitrarily say 50% may not be the right split.
Is I know. I'm just
the recommendation is maybe we ask them to increase the engineering resource time to cover the stormwater utility needs. Let them decide how to split, but we recommend that it gets increased.
Hey, I see you. What I meant is I see you. I'll get to you in just a second. Anybody else on that subject? On the subject of the 20%, the recommendation of a coordinator type person. How we get to the question of that we think it's important that there be an internal, as John says, champion.
If a stormwater and sewer advisory board was created, that would hopefully alleviate some of that.
That's a good point.
Neglect, maybe, that we're talking about, if it is neglect. Not less attention than sewer.
Yeah, and I also think, too, is it not? It's not necessarily all within one position. It may be a case that the 20% maybe gets increased or whatever, but it may be bring on temporary support. We've got a big engineering school here. I know in our case, in our utility, we manage at the university, we get a lot of value out of temporary engineering students. They do a lot of real good work for us and can kind of fill the role for some of the more basic engineering tasks. I don't know how much the city uses students now, but it's an option.
Can I ask why we would recommend that champion be an engineer? Could it potentially be the you have an educator, right?
Stormwater educator.
Yeah. And is that their full-time job? Yeah.
You know, part of our role here is happening right now. When Carl's here, effectively he's the face of the council and he hears these things and he takes them back and says, you know, they're concerned that perhaps there's not enough championship for stormwater. I don't you think? I had two citizens that wanted to make comments on this issue.
Dan Cullimore, 715 Lyon Street. It's obvious through all of this discussion that there's some funding gaps, and those are felt in staffing as well. So part of this, to state the obvious, is that should stormwater funding be increased by whatever mechanism, some of the FTE equivalents may become more readily funded for whether it be stormwater engineering or stormwater championship or other types of staff needs. So it's kind of hard to separate this ball of string, I think, you know, probably recommendations for finding ways of increasing funding will have some other will have considerable impact on some of the other recommendations you're going to consider. So, and at some point later, I have comment on the legal aspects too. So.
Okay. So you don't want to wait until the end and do them all at once.
Well, no, because there's not enough time. And by the way, you've already made your decisions, kind of stuff. I've been in a lot of meetings where it's at the end, decisions are made, had good ideas they could never be considered because, oh, yeah, they're at the end, they're in the minutes, useless.
I don't think we've made any decisions.
No, you have. I'm sorry, but you haven't been in many of these meetings over the last 20 years. I have. That's okay. Been the tip. But I like your question about the 20%. Let's see, what, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, I was sitting in a report where somebody comes in, big study, you know, you got $300 million worth of work in today's dollars to do. And if you don't do some of it, the next round of the EPA stuff is going to just drown you in the next level of regulations. in one of the recommendations here, it's like maybe in 2020 we're going to ask for a bond issue and so forth. Greg had a wonderful list of work for people to do, probably all of which is going to be needed to get going for and preparing not just a champion, but actually the kind of work, by the way, hopefully working with an advisory board to get ready for that kind of list down the road. I at least is just fine, but for this really to be meaningful, given all of those kind of things, because we're going to move down those roads, you're going to have to need a major staff person. This is not just going to be the head of public works or something like that. I just can't see that it's how. It's also the case that our city, we're already having stormwater problems in our city that are caused by buildings built within the last 15 and 20 years, not 60 years ago. And it's because we had one person who reviewed stormwater plans around all kinds of things. Desk was stacked to the ceiling. We didn't hire anybody. No real review. We're already having that. So don't understaff this seriously. And I'm not sure that this, I'm certainly you're going to need a competent professional to actually organize the works of students, or frankly, it will be not very useful on the campus. Maybe you do. We could have long ago outsourced and hired professional people to help us do our work, especially in the planning department, when we needed, without adding to our permanent staff. So I think at least 50%, and then looking around. Under the Beck administration, I have no idea whether Mr. Beck ever got such a recommendation, but we're all suffering because we didn't have the planning resources up front when the growth was taking place. At least 50%, I'd actually say 100%, this is really, really needed if you're going to be serious about addressing these issues. Just based on what I've heard and what I see in your list of things, and what Greg has just presented about the work that needs to be done if it's going to be reasonably responsible. Thank you.
Any questions?
Well, I always like questions, but I never get them.
Okay. Then.
Because I'm so thorough.
That's it. Okay, so Greg's language will go forward as our second draft or potential resolution or recommendation. Another one is the underlying question that both citizens talked about is effectively our gap between revenue and the work that's not done. And that's the big gorilla in the room with stormwater. How do we close the gap? And I guess that comes down to the one that starts with the utility should evaluate, or the council should evaluate going to the voters by 2020 to seek approval to sell bonds to close the capital gap that we have in stormwater. And I'll make that as a potential recommendation, that we suggest to the council that they consider issuing a bond for the purpose of closing the unfunded capital needs gap in stormwater.
Okay, but it goes back to the basic premise that a municipality has to have the statutory authority to issue stormwater revenue bonds. And there is not a statute on the books that permits a municipality to issue stormwater revenue bonds. Until such time that you get to the point that there's been state legislative action to create that authority in the statutes, by 2020, then this will not happen if you don't get that done by 2020.
That presumes that Nancy's informal opinion is incorrect. She I think, at least tentatively believes that we could move forward without it. But whether we can or we can't legally, that's a question that I think the council can answer. And if they think we do need it, then we go and get it. But the question is, you go and get it because you believe you need to issue or at least ask the people for the bonding authority. And this gets them to that discussion. I think they can say, yes, we should do this, and we don't need statutory approval, or yes, we should do this, and we do need statutory authority, and then go get it. Isn't that all correct?
I think so. We got, you know, we can't, you clearly have to have the statutory authority to issue those bonds. And that's what the other municipalities are strung with, and I've talked to bond counsel. I worked with bond counsel for 30 years, bond counsel tells me there's no statutory authority to issue stormwater revenue bonds, but we need to let Nancy get into the middle of that and get down to the bottom of that and see what that holds. And I really hope that it does exist, so, because that's a big step to moving away.
Yeah, that's the great big gorilla.
Yeah. And I'm not here to argue with
about that. I understand, and it's a good point. But regardless of the answer to that question, do we still want to recommend that the council consider a revenue bond? And then the council answers that. The council, with their best legal advice, answers that question. Does anybody want to change or disagree with the concept that we need to suggest to the council that they consider that option? Okay. That'll go on the list as number 3. I don't think we should put a specific amount of money on it, by the way. All right. What am I missing here now?
How do you think the amount of money should be determined?
I think that's a technical question that the council has to balance what the staff, the engineers say is needed, and what they think they can get done with the voters. But I don't think we can they understand that question, and they're going to be closer to the time of making a decision, and they'll have much more specific analysis leading to the number.
But who's doing the specific analysis? The staff?
I think the staff, and then the council will apply their own, when I say political, I mean small p political, expertise to it and say, listen, I think we can do 12 or 8 or 15 or whatever.
Yeah, I was just making sure we really didn't want to recommend hiring somebody to do a study on what catch up.
I'm
not saying we do or don't.
Right, I understand.
Let's see. Now, are the documents that exist based upon Aaron Key's presentation going through the needs list, you know, I can't remember the first 5 years or 5 to 15 or whatever. Those are all documented needs for CIP. Is that right out there?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you can't,
then the next ingredient is the repayment ability of the utility to support the bonds, and so you have to look at the cash flow based upon those fee increases as to what is available to pay those bonds that will be taken away from the enterprise funds that are now noted and dedicated to doing the CIP from enterprise funds. And it'll go like this, to say in, I know these numbers are not correct, but it, as a, for instance, would be in the year 2020, if it shows that enterprise funds of $2.5 million are going to CIP projects, And if you would consider a bond issue of $10 million at 4% for 25 years, that annual payment is $650 or $650,000 a year. So it would be $650,000 off that $2.5 million that would go to support and accelerate $10 million. Okay, that's the way that
right. So, I think that's the right analysis.
Yeah.
But I think that's all for the council to the degree of, because they can get into the specificity of it much more than we can. Okay. That's the third one. Now, does anybody want to make a recommendation with regard to the way we bill stormwater?
So let's, in a form, let's define the problem. As we would view the way it's done now, are there inequities? Are we violating the fairness doctrine? Are we being inconsistent? Do we have a void where we're not billing someone that we need to? Let's make sure we define the problem that we have.
I think there's no question you're not billing.
Okay.
For stormwater when utilities are shut off.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's right. I think we all know that to be true.
And then I think Greg has it on his document, but the impervious surface for the complexes that have sidewalks, parking lots, garages, pool houses, pools, and all that, are we missing that impervious structure in the stormwater billing?
I think that's all true.
I think it might be better I would recommend more of a generic recommendation than real detailed specifics, because billing is a complex topic. Jim would probably second that. And really, we have to rely on the city to coordinate the billing. But what we really want to achieve is that we have fairness throughout the billing cycle, whether you're a residential customer or you're a commercial customer, that it be basically have mechanisms to not have a shortfall. In other words, don't let those bills not get paid. You're going to have some loss, no doubt, but if we can minimize that, that's more money that can go back to the utility to get the good work done that they need to do. So maybe draft something of all our ideas together into more of a consensus document or statement.
At the present time, the rate structure is so minimal for residential property, it doesn't really matter. If you're going to expect to be able to increase those rates, at some point in time, inequity of billing on a tiered system is going to come into play. Like for my house, if it's got 2,000 square foot, I'm being charged $1.81. Whereas somebody else has got 6,000 square feet, they're being charged $1.81.
Mm-hmm.
And it ought to be, in my mind, on total impervious area rather than on the square footage of the first floor.
Okay, I hear these issues. One, the issue that Bill articulated earlier and John just did now, which is fairness, equity. Another one is the technical practicality of changing the billing system. Third is to consider any billing changes that we may well have to go back to the voters. So that's kind of a political question. Or should there be a difference between commercial and residential? We have a difference now. Should that difference change? Should it all be impervious? Given those, at least those four factors, I think we need a specific proposal to consider, or several specific proposals, but I don't hear it yet. I don't hear the language.
Okay, I think also, Mr. Chairman, that we sitting here, we can't gauge the significance of what that change would represent financially.
That's a fifth
but,
thing.
But
that's
I
right.
think it, in a general sense, we should be specific that it be revenue neutral.
Okay.
Why would we want to change it if?
Pardon?
I thought we were trying to gain revenue.
Well, you can, if the billing, if there, you'd have to examine the full impact of it to see where the impacts were, but I don't know that we'd want to be changing a, or it has, I don't think it has a good public perception of changing where that the city would be getting a windfall from the change.
Identifying that we have a gap in funding for failing.
Yeah, no, but the I think Cody, these are two different items.
Yeah, if you bill on impervious area for residential property, you should not gain an extra $2 million.
Correct.
You should lower the rate to where you remain revenue neutral.
Yeah.
But then you've got a better, more equitable
system
right. in place.
Thank you, Bill. That's what I was trying to.
Yeah, but you're going to the voters anyway, and wouldn't that be part of our recommendation to increase revenue?
Oh, we're here.
Well,
yeah. Don't we already have a lack of revenue just for day-to-day maintenance that the stormwater fees aren't covering?
Well, I think it's a real basic question. Do we want, if we make a recommendation of this sort, it could be A, system that raises revenue, B, a system that produces greater equity, or both. Knowing that if it's either, it's probably going to have to go to the voters anyway. So let's do this. Anybody who wants to make a recommendation in this area, let's have as concise, exact words, given those considerations, for consideration at the next meeting. Is that fair enough? So I haven't been able smart enough to be able to have it coalesce in my head. And if somebody else is taking those factors into consideration, make a proposal, a specific proposal that we can add at the next meeting.
I want to add one little thing. I think if we go down a path of impervious structure calculation for residential all the way through, is it there's nothing structured to the tiered rate now. So if, like Kim said, if I had a swimming pool and fill out the half acre yard I have with concrete, I'm still going to pay, what do we pay, Bill?
$1.81, I believe.
$1.81. I'm still going to pay $1.81, but I just created an incredible amount of impervious surface on my lot. So basically, I think if we have that, you want to have it in a system that incentivizes people who are reducing impervious surface or collecting that rainwater. So if they do the calculation, we make it fair, people can reduce their own bills. Those that want to build concrete wonderlands will pay more.
I agree with that, but I think the question remains, if I remember correctly when we asked Aaron about this, that it would require a lot of work on somebody's part to find out what that amount is, and then how would we track it if, you know, say you're paying whatever you're paying and then you go and build your swimming pool. Is how do we find out that somebody has built this giant swimming pool and filled their yard with concrete?
Get a permit for a swimming pool.
Permit.
That's why there's such big considerations on both sides of every one of these questions that I don't have the right answer.
Don't the assessor records have that? I know they hopped right on us when we had to get a permit, obviously, but when we got our shed done, our assessment went up, right? So, I mean, that information is somewhere. We're paying taxes on it.
Okay.
Anything of any size you're getting a permit for, unless you're.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're not saying that we're charging. We want to charge stormwater fees to make money. We want the stormwater fees to
pay for stormwater problems.
Right. They're not arbitrary. I mean, surely the way we assess fees is somewhat based on what we need.
Okay.
Or should
be. If you want to have a recommendation of this in this area considered next time, come with specific language that we can then snap at. Fair enough? Don, you want to say something?
I like the various parameters you're talking about and think they need to be considered. The first thing I'm going to mention is COFRs. We are in disastrous shape around assessment, collection, billing, and all this because we've had systems that don't talk to we haven't updated meaningfully our financial management systems for years. We're in the process. So 3 years from now, we would be able to do different kinds of billing. All this kind of stuff, all the stuff that has been a problem forever. The snap, oh, it's just too hard to think about. We don't have enough time. All this kind, that's going to go away. So with that as a background, what I would suggest is that you think in terms of recommending to the council that at the end of 3 years, they have defined, they've rationalized assessment billing connection with a long-term view that this will be ready at 3 years. By that time, COFRs will be here, people will be trained, this kind of stuff. I think you need to look out there at these long-term needs. So revenue neutral and so forth, I mean, you need to have a bunch of projections on different scenarios because if we're going to do something, we're going to probably need more money. So it's not just revenue neutral. And basically say, that recommend the council needs to say what we want things to look like, the kind of way we want to assess, we're using impervious services, the kind of way we want to bill on these various kind of things, the different kind of changes around vacant versus non-vacant, all of those kind of things, and say this is what it should look like when we push the button and start implementing this 3 years from now. And then work backwards to decide, so what are we going to need to do today for that? One of those things is to make sure that the COFRs people and so forth are building a system that will actually provide your data. One of the big things is not COFRs per se, but the school district is making great use of it. And John and Greg, I think most of you want to be able to have a series of scenarios about what you're going to do, what you're going to charge, and be able to throw off 2, 5, and 10 years from now the fund balances that you're going to have. So that part of your thing is that structure of being able to project. So you got plans. I mean, the school district had a 10-year plan for fixing things, a physical plan. And then they use that process to say, well, we're going to have to ask for this in 2 years and that in financing. You want that to be part of this kind of thing. So getting this kind of much better system, which frankly, hopefully will go right by the staff's objections in the past, because we're now going to have a financial management system that can do it. Now, they're going to have to do some things there much differently, but lots of that we can now kind of fix. So assume that's going to get fixed and say, what would we like to do this? What would we assess on? How would we collect? All this kind of stuff. And then from that, start backing up. And you can outline those. And in that process come all of these issues you're talking about and the balancing. I'm afraid that certain kinds of practicality have always trumped things in the past because we didn't have the ability to do it. I don't want that thing to really affect you too much because we should have much greater ability to handle these kind of things, as opposed to coming up with the perfect solution next week.
Thank you.
I think that would be, I think that as a way of thinking about this and then working back from it will help you frame maybe your recommendation that you want to send to the council.
What haven't we covered in the recommendation area?
One area we had several recommendations is related to how to prioritize the work. I know that you have your program now, but there seems to be these projects that keep coming up that are just screaming to get done, but they don't seem to come to the surface quick enough to get.
You had great language, which was that they have an objective process.
Yeah, I won't take credit for all that. Kim and I came up with that
together.
Well, so.
you, plural. Where's that language?
Seemed like it was in the first part of it.
I have it here somewhere.
I tried to talk about it one time, but I
can read it a little bit. It's in an email, or actually a letter that I sent. I don't know if it shows up in the spreadsheet as well. But it was expand assessment of assets with a consistent grading system to help prioritize maintenance and repair and capital projects. This will help the utility stay focused on priorities on a fair, open, and defendable procedure. New failures should not take precedence over old failures.
That's the part.
That ought to have been addressed with exception for correction for pollution and public safety. I think that's a real good point. I think that came mostly from Kim about making sure we take care of our biggest issues that are nagging us and getting them behind us.
I like that language, and I think it should be its own recommendation, and I don't have any suggested changes in it. Does anybody else? We have a comment? Please.
Hearth. I want to return to something that we all heard in the beginning. That was Aaron's wonderful presentation. And she talked about us being short essentially about $5 million per annum. And we have two elements of shortness. We have your crisis mode and then the maintenance we can't do right now, right? If we could, in whatever recommendation you all make to council, address that piece specifically, because I'm thinking the admin changes, while they're awesome, we're not going to recruit more than 5-10% more money, you know, $300,000-$400,000.
Let me interrupt you a minute.
Sure.
In our shorthand, we've come to think of that as the split area, the difference between revenue and need. And I think of the potential of a revenue bond as what brings us closer to the meeting point of those two graph lines.
You're thinking of a revenue bond to address the crisis issues?
Yeah.
And then other mechanisms
not
to
just
focus
crisis.
On the maintenance piece that's shortfalling?
Yeah, kind of. The staff, in my opinion, kind of thinks that if we dealt with our backlog, and if I'm wrong here, correct me, guys, they kind of think that the current fee structure would take care of ongoing or rising needs if we could close the gap.
That a fair representation? A dollar, you know, wherever we're at. If we could take number one, we haven't identified all the CIP problems yet, right? Or we have things at the 1 to 5, 6 to 10, and yeah. We would love for it to work. And Katrina's issue, you guys can know about her wonderful situation. I'm not sure that's enough money, Chris, is where I'm getting at.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah.
So, also trying to walk the line between what's doable.
Well, what's politically possible. I appreciate that. And what's saleable. And that goes to, you know, what Greg and John were talking about. I just wanted to.
No.
We're spending a lot of time on that admin piece, and we're not going to get much out of that.
The big girl in the room is the difference between the revenue and the need.
Yeah, and you guys are short 158. I mean, your general analysis per annum. $5 million. And that's, John, that's awesome. We think all, you know,
where let
you
me
guys
tell
are
you,
have
we're
this conversation
we're all
times 7-8 more times.
We're all very cognizant of that. That hence the question about why are we fooling with the fees if it doesn't raise revenue, right? Mm-hmm. We're all over that.
I just wanted to focus back in on that gorilla standing there. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Well, and if I could add just one thing, too, that I just had a thought. The administrative and the raising fees and the kind of nickel and dime stuff that's not really a lot of money is still valid in the way it looks to the public. So, if we're asking for $10 million to make all these major repairs, but there's a broad segment of the population that feels like
it's inequitable.
The fees are inequitable and kind of screwed up, then what's the point anyway, you know, kind of thing. And if you're going and if you're correcting the whole thing rather than just a bit of it, maybe it would make more sense to folks.
Okay. do me a favor and put the language that you just talked about with the priority of not changing.
Yeah, I'll clean this up a little bit. It's actually got a lot of thought that, you know, we just kind of threw
right.
our thoughts
out there.
Right,
I don't want it to be thought. I want it to be a very
We need to bring it down to
a hard couple of sentences.
But I do think this is a recommendation whether bonding is pursued or not. I mean,
that's
still,
right.
We still don't need a hard, fast, defendable, publicly viewable priority system, because I think that's part of the process. People are going, how come they're spending money over there and not over here? And
that's
people
right.
understand why the money is being spent over here. And that there's just not enough to do everything.
Okay. Any other areas for specific recommendations that ought to be put on the table?
I don't have any other recommendations, but I do have a question for Mr. Windsor. If, Jim, as you view what we're doing here and that we're dealing with the utilities and that the city is on the cusp of changing financial management system, is that right? We're changing. Okay. Do you think there would be any benefit that this group would receive a short overview of what that means for the utilities? Think that have much?
I'm not sure that it would be of great value. I mean, we could certainly do that.
I'm looking for the value.
I would say probably not.
Okay. That's fair.
We will be able to do more things. We will have better information available. And certainly on the billing system, we will be providing citizens with more information, detail. So there will be significant improvements. Whether that relates to what you're discussing specifically, I don't really think it does, other than the fact that as we're going through this process, we are trying to address some of the issues that you're talking about. I think utilizing the GIS information will greatly enhance our ability to distinguish those inequities you're talking about, particularly on the residential side.
Thank you.
I don't hear any other recommendations.
Are we going to have a recommendation about any kind of fee increases? The only thing I want to make sure we don't miss is the flat rate increases that have been, we haven't been getting them, but then they're ineffectual by the time they're fully implemented. Are we going to make, is that something we're going to talk about or recommend?
If you want to make a recommendation, I don't have one that I want to make, but somebody might, and it's certainly reasonable to do that.
Okay.
What's the question again?
Not just for stormwater, but the making fee increases more regular so that when they're implemented, they're effectual or not ineffectual. Like the rate increase we just passed, that wasn't really what we really, it wasn't the full amount of what we needed, and it was 20 years after the fact. You know what I mean? They're just.
Okay.
I don't know how we would solve that.
You know what I think about that is, I think if we're successful, if the council puts in an advisory board, the advisory board's going to be an advocacy group effectively. And I could be wrong about that. But.
No, you're right.
I have a question related to that. Since we did just pass the rate increases that are over a period of time, does that mean that council couldn't take another proposal back to the voters? Like, if we were talking about going for voter approval anyway, could we recommend that council go to voters for a rate increase?
We certainly could.
Above and beyond what we've already asked for?
We certainly could if somebody has a proposal they want to make in that regard. My reason for not doing it is because I think that we are on the verge of making two recommendations that require citizen votes. One is potential of a revenue bond, And second is on kind of an equitable or impervious surface type change in billing structure. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that a third vote of the people, it just to me seemed like a lot to swallow.
Other than the revenue bond could include a rate adjustment.
Sure, but for that purpose. And that's why I was, but if somebody, I don't think it's a bad idea. I was kind of concerned about.
Well, my thinking is, you know, while a bond does put in influx of money that they can utilize right now, it's not ongoing, whereas a rate increase would be more ongoing. I don't know if that's more palatable to the voters, though. So
I don't know either. But if you want to make one.
Well,
I think I would be probably in favor of supporting something like that. I would have to decide and prioritize which ones I liked, because I wouldn't want to recommend taking three different things to the voters. But as far as the rate increase, I mean, at least I like in my head.
It's another way to approach it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Recommend that we get what the original study said we should have to meet our goals.
Why don't we? We could bring it next time in specific language, and then as everybody thinks, you know, that's the answer to my question is, Chris, you're wrong, because we're going to prioritize these things anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes sense.
I think it would be difficult, particularly for me, to be able to write something like that, because you're talking about putting an actual dollar figure on it, right?
No.
No? Okay.
Not necessarily. Whatever. Okay. You wouldn't have to do that. You could say, to meet the ongoing need. A last commenter referred to that. You guys both have referred to it this evening.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody?
And there's a document out there that's not too old that would recommend
it. That would support it. Anything else?
Chris, you had mentioned last time about should we recommend specific projects to the council that are really problematic, or do you think that's within our boundaries to do that?
The politician in me says I want to recommend specific projects, but the chairman of this kind of group says it's a really bad idea, you know?
Yeah, I kind of look at it as we're going to recommend that we set priorities and come with the criteria for selection. And then if you have a board, that board can help make recommendation to council on what's
the
most important project.
Criteria is much better than specific projects. You're absolutely right about that.
I think last minutes reflected the task force asked staff to provide the top 10 areas that need focus. If we could take the grading system that Greg's working on and include flooding that's documented to have resulted in injury or death, property damage to homes, businesses, or flooding of streets and roadways to the extent the street or roadway is impassable, and health and safety concerns, and have him get that rating system to staff, have him rate these top 10 projects.
I'm not going to develop the grading system, but I will recommend the development of a grading system.
Staff can integrate
but
your thoughts.
I do think the points you bring are very good, and I think we'll list the criteria that should be evaluated when you put a grading system together, but I would put it up to the utility to determine how that grading system is to be determined. But it just needs to be fair and representative and cover the categories appropriately.
I'd like to see the top 10 areas rated just so we can get an idea whether it's viable. The Vegan Street didn't make the top 10. Maybe we need to do a little more work on the rating system.
Well, I don't think we'll have the rating system by the time. I mean, we're just going to recommend they do a rating system. So you're wanting them to actually come up with a rating system and see what the rating system will.
How it'll affect projects.
Evaluate their actual rating system they came up with.
Yes.
Again. Anybody who wants to make a specific recommendation to either amend one of them or to make a different one, let's do them at the next meeting. And I think every single thing that's been suggested is a good idea. Let's also prioritize at the next meeting. Anything else that we should talk about tonight?
Chris?
Yes, sir.
I noticed in Saturday's Missourian, there's an article on the neighborhood meeting they had over by Oak Tires.
Yeah.
In the future, I'd like to be notified of those meetings. Or the task force be notified, or we could attend if we chose to.
Oh, okay. You guys, would that be okay?
There was some staff there, wasn't there, from some department?
Would that be a consideration that all these our emails need to be given to Bill Canton?
Oh, yeah, that's another thing I forgot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I got two more things.
Shoot.
I was also wondering if there's any requirement on the maximum size of drainage ditch or waterway that can be covered or enclosed. You can enclose Flat Branch Creek if you wanted to. I think we ought to consider requirement limiting the size of drainage way that can be enclosed. I think that's all the problems with Flat Branch.
You said two things. That's one. Do you have another one?
I can read my notes. No.
Anybody else?
Yes, I have one more thing. And this has to do with the advisory boards and or commissions and so on. And should there be any thought given to term limits?
Amend it to say, and then we can vote on that. It makes sense. You know, everybody knows all the arguments on both sides.
How's the Water and Light Board already addressed now?
No, there's old guys that have been on the Water and Light Board for as much as 25 years. If you
there's no term limits, but every once in a while you hear the wind blows about term limits. But
there's no forced retirement?
And there's no monetary retirement. It's all goodwill.
I do think it's probably a good idea to keep fresh yeah. perspectives.
I'd like to know how Tiger Place is being charged for stormwater. Tiger Place retirement.
Tiger Place.
Back to you.
Okay.
I would second that on your, Rick. I think there should be some look at term limit to get fresh ideas and ideas.
Make a...
And you know what that number is, 3 to 5 years or something of that nature. But
come with something and say you should not be allowed to serve on this thing more than X. Certainly, you could say less than Conway served on Water and Light would be the specific language.
I don't think that's fair.
He's still serving.
If he still served. Perpetuity. All right. Then we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.